This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertz, the General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing, who is very appropriately today wearing his Hogwarts shirt. Hey, Matthew.
Well, Chris, that's true. I'm wearing my Hogwarts sweatshirt because it's very chilly here now. It's we're in the 40s at this point, but underneath the sweatshirt is my brand new Trek FM Word Cloud t-shirt, which I love. It looks fantastic. I'm supporting all of our shows, all of our catchphrases, and the entire network rests on my chest, which I gotta say is pretty heavy.
It is. It's a great looking shirt, and of course you got that in our new store on Redbubble, and if anyone wants to check it out, you can go to trek.fm/store, and from there you can click through to Redbubble, or you can go to trekfm.link/trekfmstore, and that'll take you there as well. But Matthew, I mentioned that it's appropriate that you have the Hogwarts shirt on because we're going to do the Orb of Mail, and of course the Orb of Mail is always delivered to us by Owl, but today something weird happened. I noticed that the owl had glowing red eyes. What is that about?
I don't know. I'm a little worried, though, Chris. I'm not sure if it's some sort of, like, cyborg owl or if it's controlled by a paw wraith.
Well, that's what I thought. I was afraid that maybe the owl was going to land, was going to open up the orb, and then open up its little beak, and all the mail was just going to fly out into the orb, just like Descartes in Tears of the Prophets.
I'm glad that did not happen. Apparently, this owl just had cybernetic implants for eyes. Maybe some sort of accident with a raven or something, mid-air collision, who knows? So luckily, we got the mail, though, and I do kind of love that orbs are only delivered by owl posts.
Yeah,
that's a nice cross-pollination of genres there.
Very unexpected. Yeah, and I liked your theory. Of all the possibilities, it was a mid-air collision between an owl and a raven.
Oh, well, I mean, it could have been an eagle or an egret.
I like ravens.
Flamingo. A drunk penguin just jumping really high. I don't know.
A drunk penguin jumping really high. All right. Okay, well, let's go on here. We have a number of questions that we have gathered since our last Orb of Mail from our listeners, and we're going to share our thoughts on some of those today. So, Matthew, let's jump right in. And our first question comes from Michael G. in New York. And Michael says, "Hi, guys. I have really been enjoying the show, and it has in part inspired me to do my own From the Beginning rewatch. Expanding on a question another listener had about the music used in the Orb, I would like to know where the music used in the very beginning of the show is from. Right after General Martok lends his voice to the intro, there is a cue that sounds like a version of the DS9 theme, but more dramatic and drawn out. Would you be able to tell me where that is from? I recently picked up the 4-CD Deep Space Nine music collection, and I don't recall hearing it on there. Keep up the great show. So, interesting question. Someone's asked this before, and maybe I answered it by email, not on the air. The reason you don't recognize this is because what I did at the beginning of The Orb is I actually took two separate pieces of music from DS9 and I laid them on top of each other. So you will have never heard this on the show or anywhere else because it doesn't exist anywhere else. So it's a combination of the actual Deep Space Nine theme and then a track called Dry Run, which is from the suite from Way of the Warrior. And I don't think it's on that four-disc collection, actually. It's from a disc called The Best of Star Trek, which had tracks from all of the different series on it. And so the reason it sounds more dramatic is because it is a very dramatic piece, but it's got the DS9 theme laid on top of it. And when they come together, you get a lot of dissonance that's not in either of the original tracks. They happen to be pretty much the same tempo, the same time signature. They fit together quite well, but they create this atmosphere that I felt really captured the spirit of the series very well and was a little bit unique to what we have here on The Orb. Did you know that, Matthew?
You know, Chris, I did not know that. Now, I did want to mention to this listener, because I was thinking to myself, ooh, I have that CD. And then I was looking it up, and there was a Best of Star Trek, the 30th anniversary, that was CD 1, but there is also the Best of Star Trek, Volume 2, and that is where that actual track comes from. So if you're looking for that, be sure to check Volume 2 out, and you get this great, all these great suites from Way of the Warrior. You've got Bride of Chaotica on there from Voyager, some really fantastic music. I highly recommend that. And I'm very sad because I used to have this somewhere, but somehow it has gotten lost in some unfortunate digital mix-up file things that happen when you only have digital music. And so I might have to just buy this. Chris, I might have to buy this right now.
Maybe you should visit the Prophets. They can take you back to the time when you had the files.
That's a good idea. No, geez, why didn't I think of that?
Maybe you did something bad, Matthew, and your penance was that you had to lose Volume 2 of The Best of Star Trek.
All I want to do right now is sing about doing something good in my youth or childhood, but I'm not going to.
All right.
From The Sound of Music, for anybody who doesn't know the reference.
Okay, so Michael, thanks so much for your message, and thanks for asking about that, because I'm sure there are a lot of people who wonder about where that music comes from, and I finally got to tell that story here on the air. All right, Matthew, let's move on. This is definitely a question for you. It's a very long question, but I'm going to read it here because this is the Orb of Mail. And it's about books, but it's about Deep Space Nine. So Kyle Charlton in Vancouver, Washington says, "Hello, I just found Trek FM a few weeks ago. I love all things Trek, and I enjoy every incarnation of the Star Trek franchise. That said, Deep Space Nine is my favorite series, which led me to listening to The Orb. Right now, I'm playing catch-up, and while listening to The Orb of Mail, I'm going to make that part of my head canon," which, Matthew, I think may have been our first Orb of Mail episode.
I feel like it was, probably.
I think it was.
Yeah.
But I'm not positive. "I believe you spoke a little about the new DS9 station, which got me thinking about all of the post-series DS9 novels, and I was wondering what your thoughts were on how the DS9 novels were treated compared to the other series novels. I've read a lot of TNG, Voyager, Enterprise, Titan, and DS9 novels, and I feel that DS9 gets the short end of the stick when it comes to the post-series novels. It seems to me that the story arcs do not get a lot of love. There are a few DS9 novels where they were going in one direction, setting up an interesting story arc, and then suddenly the story arc gets dropped in subsequent novels. as if the writers decided that it was a bad story arc, so let's treat that story arc like it never happened. We will just have to give a brief mention of it, but won't fill you in on any details while we start off on a new story arc that we think works better. I have found myself searching the web a few times trying to find out if I missed a novel or something in the previous novel to enlighten me on what I missed, only to find out that it was just a dropped story arc. An example of a dropped story arc would be the wandering paladin race in the Gamma Quadrant who had their holy jihad to fight. They met up on a planet at the end of a novel, and then that was the last I heard of them. The only other mention was that one of the races crashed-landed on the planet where Kaiopaka was on, and cured her and the others for taking care of her. I was also not happy with how they treated some of the characters. It seems they keep these characters in limbo with hardly no stability, like you would find with the TNG crew. They killed off Vaughn, who I thought was an awesome character. Granted, he was really old. You could say that. How old was Vaughn? 120? Something like that?
Somewhere along yeah. the lines.
He was up there.
He was pretty old by the time he died, yeah.
He could get a discount at IHOP.
He didn't even have to pay anymore. Like, he just had, like, the gold card everywhere he went, you know? And then, like, over the century mark, you get in for free.
Yeah, they should. Although, in the 24th century, a lot of people probably have that.
That's true. Yeah. They're starting to rethink that, actually,
right.
I think.
Like, maybe this is not such a good idea. Okay, anyway, back to the letter. They made Sisko a horrible father and husband. As a father and husband myself, I did not feel that having him abandon his family in order to protect them came through the way the author intended. It did not feel like the thing Sisko would do, and it just made him seem blind and insensitive. I am glad the subsequent authors corrected him and got him back with his family again. I also feel that poor Julian and Kira's characters are getting tossed around a lot as well. It's like no author knows what to do with these DS9 characters, and so they are being bounced around a lot with almost no sign of peace or stability for them. This should probably go to Literary Treks, but seeing as how it's all about DS9 and your points of view on the orb are spot on with my own thoughts on the show, I was curious about your opinions. Okay, so Matthew, what do you think about this? Now, you're better versed than I am in all of the DS9 novels.
Well, luckily, Chris, Dan and I have finally almost reached the end of what we started 3 years ago, the Deep yeah. Space Nine relaunch.
Right.
It's a long process, and there are a few books even in there that we did not get to. We did not talk about the Left-Handed Destiny series, about Martok, and we haven't covered the Lives of Dax, and we won't get to, at least this year, the Never-Ending Sacrifice, but the main continuity of the storyline is still continuing and will be done with Soul Key by the end of the year. Now, as to the question of, you know, this dangling threads of storylines that happened, when Destiny came out and David Mack's brilliant work with Destiny, the publisher decided to take Deep Space Nine and put it in the same time period as the rest of the 24th century, which is very understandable. You know, they were behind by a few years, and I think 4 or 5 years, actually, from where things had ended in Nemesis, and the books had never caught up. And instead of keeping those characters out of that storyline, they just decided to skip. And it did lead this whole Ascendance storyline just this huge dangling chad. I mean, it was terrible. And they had been building up to it. And then, of course, the books after that left all of the characters in very strange places. And I'm with you. The way Deep Space Nine was treated after that was disappointing because it had always been the core of the 24th century novels. And once they caught it up, it was no longer the core. It was just kind of in the background with the TNG characters taking more of a forefront and then the Titan novels. And it's like they could never find their footing again. And they're finally bringing it back. And I will say that the storyline is getting filled in. We are going to be finally getting the Ascendant storyline. in a book called Ascendance by David R. George III. And so that'll be coming out very early next year and finally kind of telling us what happened in there.
And that's going to fill in some of the gap that's
It is. And he kind of set things up for where they're going to go in a book called Sacraments of Fire. And it's continuing on in Ascendance. And I, as far as I know, that is going to fill in the gap of what happened from Soul Key to when you jumped into Destiny and you're like, what happened? So that's great. I'm with you too. I don't like how some of the characters have been handled.
Well, I know you don't like what they did with Sisko, right?
No, I do not. I feel like Sisko should have been made an admiral. I feel like Sisko should always be the emissary, especially since in the book that Dane and I just read that precedes Soul Key, which is Fearful Symmetry, there's a scene in there where all the Siskos from all the multiverse, basically, it's like the multiverse of Siskos meet together, and they talk about how the only reason for the Sisko to exist is to be the emissary. It's in black and white.
Yeah.
And that's been taken away from him now, too, in the books. And it's just, it bothers me. Everything I feel like that they've done with that character, it doesn't feel right. Now, some of the other characters, I personally enjoyed what they've done with Bashir, really bringing to fruition the storyline with, you know, Section 31 and all of that. That's very much a part of Bashir's story arc. And so
it feels like there's this tendency to treat him like a Starfleet captain, like the other captains, right? If you're going to write stories
right,
for him, he's
exactly.
just a captain, so let's just have him be a captain and not taking into account the rest of his story and the fact that ultimately DS9, in terms of Sisko, is the story about this man's journey who is, unbeknownst to himself, a spiritual figure in another culture.
Right. I mean, Sisko is the Sisko.
Yeah.
He's not just Ben Sisko.
And all those Siskos together are the Omni Sisko.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think you're right. There is this tendency to treat him as if he was just a Picard or whatever.
Yeah.
But he isn't. He is way more than that. And I think even his character in Deep Space Nine, you know, Sisko has so many more levels to him than just being the captain of a ship with, you know, maybe 1,000 people on it. Sisko has been responsible for the entire Alpha Quadrant on his shoulders, which nobody since Kirk has really had that feeling, you know? So in all ways, I think Deep Space Nine and that captain do something completely and utterly different than we'd ever seen. And yes, to treat him in the books as if that's not the case does a complete disservice. But yeah, I'm excited that we're at least finally going to get it filled in. Dan and I are both, we've talked about repeatedly on as we've been going through this process, and we're almost at the end. We're trepidatious. We don't know what the storyline's going to be like. So who knows? Hopefully it'll be great. That's my hope.
Yeah. If they made Sisko an admiral, would he be called The Admiral?
The Admiral? Yeah, yes, yeah. Exactly. Like everybody else would just be like, is the Admiral in? Yes, the Admiral is in. You know, it would, so. I think it just kind of makes sense because, and David R. George even said this to us in an interview when we were talking afterwards, just that they had thought about making him an Admiral. And in the books, he had been offered an Admiralship. But now having him just another captain who goes exploring feels way too mundane for the Sisko.
Yeah. You know, I think part of the problem, too, is that by catching DS9 up to the rest of the 24th century and then trying to mix those characters and that story in with the other characters and stories that they're telling, it's kind of hard because DS9 is a very unique show. And to try to then mix all of that in with the rest of it, the result of it, I think, is that those characters have to be treated in the same way as the TNG characters or the Voyager characters. And so for us as DS9 fans, it feels watered down sometimes, I think, because we want more of a continuation of what we were getting at the end of this series. And that doesn't quite fit in with the overall story that's being told involving all those characters.
Right. And sadly, there's no reason for that not to be the case. I mean, they sent Voyager back to the Delta Quadrant, for goodness sake. So for that reason, because you don't need all of these ships running around the Alpha Quadrant, you know? And I think, you know, Deep Space Nine, in a sense, and where it is, put it in a very unique position to be able to tell unique types of stories. And it can still be in continuity when you need it to be with all of the other series in the 24th century. But at the same time, what I love about Voyager is they didn't make Kirsten Beyer catch Voyager up to everybody else. And they're actually a little bit behind those books. They're not quite where everything else is. So it's kind of nice. In fact, the last book, we had President Bacow still as president. She's been dead for a while now in the storyline. So they haven't made everybody stay in the same time frame. So, it was a loss, I think, but I don't know.
Well, Kyle, thanks so much for your message and for giving us a chance to talk about DS9 Beyond the Screen here on The Orb. As you said at the end of your letter, this should probably go to Literary Treks. That is the show here on the network where we talk about books all the time. So if anyone's listening and you want to really, really dig into Deep Space Nine in the novels, go over and subscribe to Literary Treks. Matthew and I were on there together for the first, 80 shows or something like that.
Yeah.
And then Dan Gunther, who joined us from time to time during that period, took over my chair, so you can hear Dan and Matthew there now. And as Matthew said, they've been all the way through the vast majority of the DS9 post-series novels at this point, and plus some of the newer ones, we have interviews with the authors, so you can really get
definitely
a lot of details there on Literary Treks. Okay, Matthew, next one that we have here is from Brad Alexander in Virginia, who I think has a perfect attendance record here on the Orb of Mail, maybe.
Brad is really, I mean, he's right on. This he knows how to make sure that his orb always gets to us right on time.
He has the best trained owls.
He really does.
All right, so Brad writes, "Hey guys, I started out watching through the DS9 episodes in the list I sent you from IMDb." And of course, we talked about that list on the last Orb of Mail. "I have been watching them in order, and I'm about 2/3 of the way through. One thing I have noticed is that it puts DS9 on an even footing with most of the other series, because you lose most of Ronald Moore's storytelling and huge story arcs, like the last 10 episode arc or the Circle Trilogy or the Dominion War series or the Klingon arc, and allows you to see each episode as an individual entity." Okay, so that's because you're watching them in a specific order instead of straight through. "What I have found is that even with story arcs notwithstanding, DS9 is still one of my favorite series. The acting and the camaraderie between the actors is stronger in this series than in the others. Obviously, others would have different opinions. Just look at baseball, a non sequitur theme that runs through the series. From teaching the prophets about it in Emissary to Take Me Out to the Holosuite in Season 7, you can see the threads that make the tapestry that is DS9. The only thing I wish is that I had started at the bottom of the list and worked my way up instead of starting with the highest rated episodes and working down from there."
Okay, so nothing like knowing you're going to end at like Prophet and Lace and Time's Orphan.
Right. Well, my question is, are you going to end on Time's Orphan or Prophet and Lace, which is going to be the bottom? I can't remember which was last on that list.
I don't either.
It's an interesting point that Brad has here, because when we think about DS9 and what makes this series unique and what makes it the favorite series of so many of us is the fact that we have those story arcs that provide that richness of storytelling that we don't get in the other Star Trek series, because they have more time to spend on the quiet moments and the details and the character interactions that just make for a stronger story overall, for those of us who care about the character aspects especially. But as Brad is saying here, take that away, and for him, it's still one of the strongest series, because there are those threads like baseball and other things that run through. What do you think about that?
Well, and, you know, I was thinking of another thing that would still stick out to you would be the father-son relationship mm-hmm. between, you know, Jake and Cisco and Ben, and because that's all over the place in many of the different episodes, and it doesn't have to be sequential. You know, it's just always there. When you get to an episode where Bashir and O'Brien are really good friends, that friendship, you know, in any of the episodes where they've become friends, it's still there, you know. So those kind of things that you'll see bounce around as you go through this list from IMDb. But
don't forget about Morn sitting at the bar.
Yeah, I mean, he's always
he's
there.
Always there. And later on, once James Darren joined, just a touch of jazz here and there feels like part of that tapestry as well, right?
Oh, goodness. Oh, man, I still love that about Deep Space Nine and how they would weave in that music. And somehow, those standards seem like they completely fit that world still.
Yeah.
It just didn't seem weird.
Timeless. I think we talked about that when we did our show about Vic and how that music is kind of timeless. That, you know, hundreds of years from
really
now, people
is.
Will still be listening to these jazz standards.
Oh, goodness. Now I just kind of want to go hit up my James Darren CDs and, or excuse me, my digital files. But no, I think Deep Space Nine, and what I love about what Brad is saying is watching it this way, that there's still something that's special about it that's kind of hard to put your finger on. It does make it different, even if you're not watching it in order. And I agree with him. You know, when I think even just about the characters like Nana Visitor or, you know, Terry Farrell, especially the female characters, they really stand out as great characters in a way that, you know, I would say, I don't know, this kind of storytelling didn't happen again until Enterprise, where they started looking to have more continuity.
Yeah,
you know, and allowing those characters, well, some of them, not Mayweather, but to be able to grow. And so,
yeah, that's very true. Although Enterprise still didn't do it to the level of DS9, but I think Enterprise and DS9 have the most in common in terms of storytelling amongst the various series. So, yeah.
Well, it also had, and strangely enough, it had the shows, I think, that were the people who ended up being the most committed to the original series.
DS9 and Enterprise.
Yeah, and Enterprise. Yeah. You know, I mean, especially by the end of Enterprise.
Although Enterprise only in season 4.
Well, that's true. But I mean, you know, I feel like even what Enterprise did with, like, say, the Andorians and things like that,
well,
that's something
true.
We
yeah,
had
yeah.
never seen on any other show. And they yeah. were doing that in the first season. So yeah. That's a real great, I mean, because Deep Space Nine would mention Andorians, but Enterprise finally showed us Andorians again.
yeah. All right. Well, Brad, thank you for sharing that experience. And for others who are going through that list, then let us know, you know, how it works for you. You can let us know in the Babel Conference over on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L into the search field on Facebook, and that will get you there if you're not already there. And as for the list, we'll have to put a link to that. I know there's a link in the previous Orb of Mail to this list on IMDb, but it's just a list of ratings, like fan ratings of Deep Space Nine episodes. And so you can go in the order. But as Brad says, maybe you want to start with the worst episode, lowest rated one, and then go up to the top. Although, as I remember, Matthew, when we did this list, even the lowest rated episode was not rated that poorly, right?
It really wasn't, Chris.
Except for profit.
It really wasn't. You know, I think, if I remember correctly, almost all the episodes are still at average.
Yeah. I can't remember.
That's pretty
impressive. Was it a 10-star rating system?
Yes,
if so, I think that none of them were under 5, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So, which is, you know, I mean, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks again, Brad, for always being here with us on the Orb of Mail. Next message comes to us from the Babel Conference. This is from Brandon Shea Mutala. He asks a very interesting question, Matthew, that I know you and I both have had to kind of figure out how to approach this question, because it's in response to our last show, really, when we talked about Sacrifice of Angels. And Brandon says, what if the penance required of Sisko, mentioned in Sacrifice of Angels, is replacing him with Jake in The Reckoning? Hope that makes sense. I know Jake was the Pah Wraith, but maybe this got shuffled around a bit due to the interference. So it's a very interesting question, Matthew, and I've never thought of this before. So I guess what Brandon is saying here is that instead of it being Jake and Kira, it would have been Sisko and Kira, but the penance is that Sisko has to potentially sacrifice his son as penance for interfering with the prophet's plan. And I suppose I can see where that might make some sense in that if you think back to the beginning, the fact that Kira is the representative of the Bajoran government on the station, and she's the first officer. Sisko is the representative of the Federation, and he is the commander, later captain, and the emissary, and originally she does not want him there. Of course, at this point in the series, I think Kira is perfectly fine with Ben's presence and believes he is the emissary, and maybe in the eyes of the prophets and the Pah Wraiths, that kind of face-off would work. But I don't know. I mean, what do you think about this?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. Because, you know, Jake is being picked by the Pah Wraiths and not the prophets. The prophets, yeah. And therefore, you know, he doesn't have a deal with the Pah Wraiths. They could care less about Sisko. In fact, they want him dead.
Okay.
So,
well, let me ask you a question. So, okay, this is a religious question, but we all know that the devil was an angel in our earth religion, in Christianity. So Lucifer was expelled from heaven and he became Satan. So my question for you is, does God still have control over Satan? Because if that's the case, even though the Pah Wraiths are picking Jake, the Pah Wraith's hand may ultimately be guided by the prophets.
That is a good question. God has allowed Satan to have a certain amount of free will, but that does not mean that the end is not always the same, that he loses. Therefore, certain things he has control over. The earth is his now, spiritually, because of that, and sin abounds because of him and what we see. So, but yeah, like I said, the end isn't always set. He'll always lose, and therefore, even what he does in the end. That's such a toughly religious question.
Yeah, but I
understand what you're asking about. Does that mean that the Pah Wraiths then are controlled by the prophets? And I think that the way that the Pah Wraiths and the prophets work are different enough from any religion that they have some interesting rules to which I still don't completely understand.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it also brings up the question of, in terms of the Pah Wraiths and the prophets, from their perspective, it's not a religion, right? The Bajorans have built a religion around them. In reality, the Pah Wraiths and the prophets are probably just an alien race that became fractured, and you know, they have two sides, and they obviously have mystical powers compared to us, and so we perceive them that way. So in their own battle, there probably is no religious connotation in the first place, of course.
Right. And at the same time, too, they could be an alien race, but they could also be the corporeal essence in some ways, and not over corporeal in the sense like we are, but they could be the manifestation of good and evil as well. So, that's one of the great things about them is they're not overly explained to us. So it leaves a lot of mystery and a lot of fun to be able to think about. But I always did wonder why the Pah Wraiths chose Jake. And my guess was it was because they were trying to get at Cisco.
Yeah, right.
And the idea was to allow, you know, Cisco to, and it's also a whole Abraham thing too, in some ways, about will you sacrifice your son and all that. And there's so much spiritually going on there in that whole thing that they're pouring into it. It's really cool, but
I think you're right that the Pawraiths trying to get to Cisco would try to go through his son, or at least cause Ben to suffer a loss that might weaken him so that he could become susceptible to their influence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and so, and then the prophets, you know, choosing Kira, I think is a mercy of the prophets for not choosing Ben to be a part of this battle, because they don't want father to have to fight son.
Yeah.
So they've chosen somebody else who's just as worthy because of the purity of her belief and her heart. So, yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, and really interesting when you start diving in and thinking about all the things that I'd love to sit down with Ira Stephen Bear and talk about the religiosity of Deep Space Nine and what were the things that they were thinking. Because I think, you know, we know some of the basics just from the storylines, but at the same time, there is a lot of stuff going on. And I mean, maybe they were just writing this stuff and they weren't thinking that deeply about it, but I think it leads to some really interesting questions.
Yeah, I think there's some inspiration there, but I don't think they were necessarily trying to tell the exact stories from the Bible in space or anything. All right.
The Bible in space.
All right. Well, Brandon, thank you for the question. It was an interesting question. I don't think that that's what's going on. I have, as I said last time, always thought that the penance that must be paid is Ben having to leave Cassidy and miss the birth of his daughter.
Well, we have one more question that came from the Babel Conference. It's from Ian Kimmins, and he asked, here's a question for both of you. People always have their best and worst episodes, but what do you think is the most important episode of Deep Space Nine? The one that sets the tone and the mood for the series?
It's a really difficult question.
Yeah, it is. It really is. Oh, gosh.
I mean, in terms of the Ready Room that we just did, which was on In the Hands of the Prophets, I said in that episode that I think In the Hands of the Prophets helps set the tone for the series. I don't know that it's the most important episode for setting the tone for the series, but I think that when you come out of season one, Duet and In the Hands of the Prophets are both very important for setting the tone of what DS9 is going to become. I think Emissary sets that tone, but then they get away from it, and then at the end of season one, they come back to it a bit. But they don't stick with it all the way through. You know, there are a lot of episodes in season two that are still similar to season one episodes. I guess, you know, if we're talking about the conflict in DS9 and we talk about the war and those elements that really define the series, certainly on the surface level for viewers, maybe Way of the Warrior, because bringing Worf on was very important to where the series was going to go. Bringing the Klingons in is very important to where the series is going to go. I don't know. It's really, really difficult because of the nature of the storytelling on DS9 to narrow it down to a single episode that sets the tone. What do you think, Matthew?
Well, Chris, I guess I didn't find this as difficult as you are. And I feel like that, and I feel like we've answered this question in some ways before, but I think it's Emissary. I think Emissary just clearly lays out, even though they didn't necessarily know it then, but where this show is going to go. Because if you watch Emissary and you watch What You Leave Behind, it seems like the full package. You're like, wow, this has come full circle.
Yeah, it does. But I think that that is the skill of the writers later in the series of going back and tying that bow and making everything fit together for the viewer. Like, I don't necessarily think that they really knew that that's where they were going by the end. And I do agree Emissary does set the tone, but the fact that they get away from it almost immediately and it takes them so long to come back to it, for me, makes Emissary maybe not my answer to this question, because I don't think that it's the point where the series really found its tone and found its footing.
What I'm saying though is I think it's the most important because it sets a tone that they get away from, but then by the end of season one and then into season two, they start to withhold too.
Yeah.
You know, so they set themselves a tone and it's almost like they then kind of backpedaled and like, isn't TNG enough, you know?
Yeah.
And then as they actually, I feel like it's kind of like when if you watch the extras on the extended editions of the even the Hobbit films or the Lord of the Rings films, especially the Lord of the Rings ones, you know, they always said, look, anytime we were doing something in the script, the closer we got to Tolkien, the better it got. And I feel like that the closer that Deep Space Nine gets back to the tone of what they were doing in Emissary, the better it is. And that's why I think people really like, you know, season four on, because they really just embraced who they are in the same way that Sisko starts to embrace who he is and Kira starts to embrace who she is. I mean, this whole show is about embracing who you are down at the core of your being, whether you're destined to be that or not. So, I don't know. That for me, that's my answer.
All right. So. Well, when I look through at some other episodes that I think are important, past tense stands out to me for the tone of the message of the show, although it's not necessarily uniquely DS9. And then The Way of the Warrior, which I already mentioned. And I think Homefront and Paradise Lost are important because, again, it helps establish what's going on with the changeling threat and within the Federation, which is important for the storyline of the series throughout. And after that, you know, Rapture is very important because of its role in establishing in Sisko's mind that it's true, he's the Emissary. And then, of course, things we've done recently with the season six opening arc and all.
Well, and I was going to say, too, I think season two with the Circle Trilogy, I think really sets a tone for, you know, what Deep Space Nine is going to do, which is going to talk about some interesting things, and it's just going to do things differently.
Well, just the storytelling format.
Yeah, exactly.
So establish that something really, was going to be different here.
Yes. Yeah.
So, I don't have maybe a clear-cut answer for you, Ian, but hopefully, well, Matthew has a clear-cut answer for you, and I'm kind of all over the place myself, so... But
Chris, come back! Come back!
I don't know. If I sit down and think about it long enough, maybe I'll come up with one. But just off the top of my head, I have various points which I think are important along the way. And yeah, I think Way of the Warrior is going to be my answer for really pushing forward the tone that defines the series from there on to the end.
What if our next two episodes, the ones that we do for December, what if we try and do those and we do an in-depth discussion on part one of Emissary and then part two of Emissary and just kind of have a fun mini arc just for December?
A mini arc.
What do you think?
The Emissary mini arc. Actually, it could be like a doubleheader because they use baseball in there, so...
That's true. It could be our doubleheader. I was just saying maybe we could, you know how Char and Tristan sometimes just tell people what they're going to do next? Maybe we could give people that fun thing coming in December. So I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, sure.
Because I mean, we've talked about it around it so much. I think people might really appreciate just us sitting down and not doing a commentary, but doing, you know, an in-depth discussion of both of those shows the way we have the others.
Yeah, we could do that. I mean, I can sit down and watch Emissary for the 12th time this year.
Have you watched it that many times?
Not 12, but I've watched Emissary quite often. I keep trying to do a DS9 rewatch, and so I'll get started, and I'll usually get into season two, and then something happens with work or something, and I just can't put in time. And then, you know, 2 months or 3 months will go by, and then I'll say, okay, I'm going to do it again. But I have to start at the beginning again because otherwise it defeats the purpose of what I'm trying to do. So I keep watching Emissary over and over.
All your emissaries.
Yeah, all your emissaries. All right. Yeah, I mean, why not? I guess we can do that for the next couple of shows. So everyone, fire up your emissary and get prepared. All right, Matthew. Well, those are all of the letters brought to us by the owls today. And so for the next time we do an Orb of Mail, it'll be down the road, maybe, you know, 5 or 6 shows from now. So if you have questions for us, anything we've talked about in the past is fair game. Anything we talk about between now and then is, of course, open. Just drop us a line. You can do it through the Babel Conference, of course, on Facebook. Type B-A-B-E-L to get in there. That's our closed listeners group. Or you can contact us through the website, trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to us. Or find us on Twitter. Our username is trekfm. It might be kind of hard to ask a great question for the Orb of Mail in 140 characters, but you can try if you want. And you can also send us voicemail at speakpipe.com/trekfm. So Matthew, when you're finished cleaning up after the owl today, where can people find you?
Damn owl, Chris, every time lands right on the desk. And anyway, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can find me on Instagram following Trek FM, where I will post pictures of cleaning up after the owl sometimes. You can find me on Literary Treks with Dan, talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. And as we talked about here in depth, going through, we've got all of the Deep Space Nine relaunch for you now, and we'll be finishing up with Soul Key very soon. So that's all there for you as a reference now. And then we've got interviews with authors about their latest books. So that's a great place. If you love the books of Star Trek and the comics, check us out. We have a great time there. I'm on the 602 Club. We're talking about all things geeky. I mean, everything from new to old. I've even been starting planning next year. We're going to talk about some fun old stuff like Dune and like Highlander. And of course, we're talking about all the new stuff like Star Wars because, you know, in Star Wars.
Is there Star Wars stuff going on these days, Matthew? Because I'm not sure. I just thought that just for some random reason, the kiosk on the train platform yesterday had bags of Star Wars popcorn. So,
yes, I think there's a new movie coming out sometime in December or something like that. Yeah. But anyway, we'll probably talk about it in the 602 Club. And then you can find me on my own personal blog, Chris, at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not still trying to figure out what episode of Deep Space Nine you do think is the most important, where can we find you?
Time's Orphan.
Profit and Lace.
That's my final answer. I'm going to go watch it right after we stop recording.
Goodbye.
Oh, man. Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's also my name on Facebook, and you can find me in the Babel Conference. And you can find me elsewhere on the network doing the Ready Room with other hosts from all around the network, where we talk about Star Trek news and we do a feature. We rotate through all 5 live-action Star Trek series. As I mentioned earlier, the most recent episode is, in fact, about DS9, and it's about In the Hands of the Prophets. You can also find me doing our short news show from time to time called Hyperchannel and Continuing Mission occasionally, which is about independent projects and fan films. If you want to read my writing about Star Trek, you can find that on the official website at startrek.com. Just search for C. Brian Jones. That's probably the easiest way to pull up all of the articles in my column. And then I do another podcast that has nothing to do with Star Trek called Metropolis on Air. And you can find that in iTunes and other places by searching Metropolis on Air. And that's connected with the magazine that I run here in Tokyo. Matthew, one other thing we need to do quickly here. We kind of got sidetracked talking about Emissary and stuff, and we didn't say thank you to our wonderful associate producers here on The Orb who help us keep this show coming to everybody every week or every fortnight. Let's go British here, Matthew, because we do this show about every 2 weeks. Every fortnight, we are helped by Ruth Ward, Will Wynn, and Ken Tripp in bringing the show to you. And they support us through Patreon. And you can do that as well. We are a listener-supported network, so we do need your help. So please go to patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to find out how you can help support the network and even become an associate producer yourself. Take part in the patron roundtables, talk Trek with fellow listeners, and more. Again, that's over at patreon.com/trekfm, and we really thank everyone for their support.
Well, thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.